Burrow's furniture is built for the way you live. From ensuring easy assembly and disassembly to honoring highly requested new colors for their award-winning seating, they always have their customers in mind. Their modular seating is made out of durable materials to last and grow with you. And with Burrow, you always get fast, free shipping. Get up to 60% off during Burrow's Memorial Day sale at burrow.com/ACAST. That's burrow.com/ACAST. burrow.com/ACAST.
Hello and welcome to the Niler 9 podcast. It is episode 331 on the Niler 9 podcast. And as Andrea, who joins me this week, has just let slip, she has not listened to last week's podcast because she wasn't on it.
That's not the reason why I haven't listened to it.
Yeah. You were like, did we do a podcast? I was like, I did while you were away. Remember?
I know. I'm sorry. I know. Swiftageddon. It's in my app. I'm really excited to listen to it, actually. I feel
saying that now. Sorry, a lot of things are happening. Life moves fast.
Life is surely moving fast. Yes. Hello, everyone. I'm back from my travels. Good to see you all again. How are we doing? How are you, Niall?
I'm great.
Yeah.
As I was telling you before we got on air there, I've become a local sleuth.
Local detective. Are you talking about it publicly? Yeah.
Well, I'm not going to mention any names, but I mean,
no.
Yeah. So here's my little story. For the last 2 years.
God.
Yeah. For the last 2 years, I moved in with my girlfriend, and for the last 2 years, shortly after I moved in, my car started being keyed by somebody. And this happened a number of times. Very early on, I was like, this is really annoying. And it was significant. And the damage was significant. And it turns out they were doing it to other cars on the road as well, because we live where we live on the canal here, the cars, not all of us have driveways. And obviously driveways are cost prohibitive. So I have to park my car on the drive, on the path, always leaving room for wheelchairs and everybody else as well, of course. But, you know, basically, when I found out this was happening, I looked it up. And any stories I found online of people keying cars, it's always an older man. And I remember telling people that, like, you know, that's what the internet says. And loads of people are just like, oh, it's definitely young people. Mm. Like, I started up a WhatsApp group on my road because there wasn't one. Yeah, I was like, well, we should have one on anyway, so let's just do it. At first, I mean, nothing really happened, but more just like people were sharing information, mostly me, let's be honest, mostly me sharing that this was happening and to keep an eye out. And I got a Google doorbell, and that didn't really help because those are battery operated and they go real quickly unless you get a wired one. You can get wired ones, but they don't last in terms of battery. So I wasn't sure when this was happening. And then it stopped. Then this keying of the car and the cars on the road stopped until 2 weeks ago when they started again. So I couldn't believe it. I was like, we've gone this. My car is already ruined. Like, if you see a picture of it, I have a blue car. And it has like significant like waves of scrapes on the inside and on the outside, because once I parked it the other way.
Don't dox yourself too much now.
Yeah. What happened was it started happening again. And I was like, what am I going to do? So what I had done before was the very webcam I'm using right now to talk to Andrea, to see into her world. I decided I would use that and put it out the window of the front of the house here and see if I can capture this person.
Genius.
So I did this before, and I went when it happened late last year. Actually, it could have been early. I think it was May 2022. Anyway, any night it happened, I never could catch him, the person that did it. And I was like, it was basically me reviewing hours and hours of footage, and going, okay, what's happening? I can't see anyone do anything. So I was like, well, I felt a bit powerless when it started happening again. I was like, what can I do? So I downloaded some software from the internet, and this software is like a motion detection software, right? You can set up masks on the screen. So I did the same thing again. I've moved my setup here from one side of the room to the other side of the room. So I'm a bit closer technically to the car. So now I pointed outside the window.
And you have more room for your chalkboard, your cork board with all your strings.
Yeah, now I have more room for that.
Dublin City.
Yeah, yeah. Because it's happening to my neighbors as well.
Your picture of an outline of a man with a question mark in the middle.
Yeah. Red string everywhere.
Yeah.
The red string in my mind was being pulled taut in the last couple of weeks, because I set up this motion detection stuff. There's an app called iSentry, which does it for you. And you can set the level of motion detection. All this to say was I was basically keeping an eye out on the car for scrapes. And then when I was noticing a scrape, I would log it and then have a look back at the footage. And a week and a half ago, I found them. I found them in the video footage, finally.
Ladies and gentlemen, we got them.
We got them. So I got the footage of him doing it. You can clearly see his hand keying the car, but he doesn't look at the car. So that's why it was so hard to catch
him. No, disdain.
Yeah.
So this is a professional.
Yeah. So I noticed that there was a pattern of things that he does it on the same day, around the same time. And so I put the message into the local WhatsApp group that I'd set up, as well as there's another one nearby, which is a wider group, which was around a housing development that was going to be built, which was refused because of On Board Pinala. And a lot of the locals here rejected that. So there was a lot of people working together to kind of reject people power, to reject a very high, like 10-story apartment block behind people's houses that would have blocked loads of sun, all this kind of stuff. Anyway. Just today, I got a call from somebody who is in the WhatsApp group who told me the name and address of the person who has been doing this. So,
and that person
that is
was
it was Damien Rebecca Vardy's.
I don't know why I said Damien Rice.
Damien Rice.
I just thought like a musician who had a grudge. Damien Rice.
What a couple of people have said in the Discord. All right,
it was when you first told me that this was happening. I was like, this is the dad of someone whose band you didn't cover, even though they sent you loads of tapes to Niler 9, Dublin, Ireland or something. Do you know, like I too thought it was going to be an older person, because I think keying cards, something quite boomerish about it. It's quite a boomer crime. I don't think young people do it. They've got their own crimes. They've got crimes we haven't even thought of yet. But
crims.
Crims.
I mean, I'm currently deciding what to do about it.
I'm fascinated by this. Like, I'm really, really fascinated by it. But keep us updated.
Last week he came by and I was ready for him, but I wasn't sure if it was him, and he didn't do anything, so I left it. But now with the new armed with this new knowledge, I'm pretty sure I know it's this person. So yeah, now to figure out what to do. Basically, I'd like him to stop doing it for a start. And then also, it'd be great if he could fix the damage that he caused.
Imagine if he listens to the podcast.
We will see. God, no. He definitely doesn't listen to this podcast. He doesn't know to listen to any podcast, this man. Anyway, that's me and my super sleuthing day of
done.
At home. So I finally, do you know, my dad will be very happy about this, because my dad has been very upset about this.
Yeah.
And I did feel a little bit less helpless when I found the video, first of all. I actually had evidence of somebody doing it. It was like some sort of weird car key fairy that I was never able to catch.
I know.
But I think they were obviously getting a kick out of it, because they were doing it in a way which wasn't obvious. So, yeah. And who knows why people do this, but it has been an interesting process and an interesting road we've been on.
Really, so. you rear-windowed it. Like, you were at that window.
No. I've been curtain twitching for so long now, and it's finally paid off.
It's good to hear, and it's good to hear of people power, even if it's just kind of more person power.
Yeah, yeah. And do you know what? It's arriving at the right time, because as I may have mentioned on this podcast before, myself and my partner are expecting, and we're expecting in the matter of a matter of weeks now. And I was like thinking to myself,
expecting
a baby. Yes, was saying to myself, like, I was like, I don't want to be one of those people who's like has one eye out the window while holding a newborn, because they're trying to catch some soup. It just felt like one of those stories that could go wrong, where you're like, well, Niall used to be fine, but now he's totally obsessed with this car key guy, and he's gone nuts. And you just find yourself standing in the middle of the road shouting at some man who actually
isn't your baby.
yeah, and just like the lack of sleep and everything else that's going on has upset him greatly. And
it could make you paranoid. Yeah, there's a reason why, like, Bruce Wayne doesn't have children. You know, it's too much to be taking on at once, fighting local crime and raising a child. So, but I have to say, when you were talking about the different software and the cameras and so on, I was like, this person's ready to be a dad. This is this is a dad in the making. This is dad knowledge.
I've always loved accessing technology. So, it does feel a little bit like, you know, cheating system when you figure out a cheap way of capturing somebody, or like doing that kind of stuff. So, yeah. Anyway,
if you have a story about fighting local crime,
I should do? Contact me at podcast@niler9.com.
Get in touch.
I know where he lives now. I can just stand outside his house and freak him out and point at him.
Yeah. Put keys in his letterbox.
Yeah, for sure.
For legal reasons, we are joking. I had an exciting week. I was away last week. So I wasn't here for the podcast because I was in sunny Huddersfield. I say sunny. Storm Babette was happening. I was there for a dance music conference. I was presenting, interested in this.
Yeah.
Really cool. So it was my first conference presentation as a PhD student, and I was very scared. And I presented on some cool dance music feminist collectives in Dublin. If you're thinking of one right now, I probably mentioned them in my presentation. And yeah, it was really cool. It was 2 days. There were some really good talks. I'm so sorry, Niall. I missed the Italo Disco talk
because
I had to work on my own presentation. But my my supervisor, Caroline, went to it and said it was great. So I might get in touch with that person and ask them for their slides, because I'm very interested to see what it was all about. But I saw a really good presentation on like the concept of vibes on a dance floor. That was also a little bit the history of the disco ball, like the actual disco ball itself and the ball in media and stuff. It was like, I was sitting in that one and I was like, Niall would love this.
Disco balls.
It was really, really great. And then there was a great presentation. So I was in a kind of, they kind of grouped them together by theme, and I was in like a queer and feminist block of four of us. And there was a cool project from a woman who is working with a group in Brighton that are a sober, accessible, silent queer disco. And it just looks like it's just like the project itself is so amazing. And it's just such a cool group. It's such a cool like collective of people in Brighton. And then there was another girl who was presenting work on what do you call it? The genre that that Peaches is.
Electroclash,
and electroclash as one of the few genres of electronic dance music where it's primarily women, both as musicians and as producers. So she was actually an undergrad, but like I was like, wow, this is. But it was amazing because at the end of that presentation, one of the other women in the audience put her hand up and she was like, "Oh, I'm really good friends with Peaches. I can text her and ask her." if she can talk to you for your project. And the girl at the podium nearly fainted. She was like, "You're friends with Peaches." It was just amazing. It was such a cool conference. The conference is Dance Cult. If there's any academics out there who are interested in, they also publish a journal, which is really, really great. Peer reviewed journal. There's some, I think it's open access. It might be open access if anyone wants to read any of the work in there. It was just great. But then, obviously, coming home during Storm Babette on, you know, one of those tiny, you know, when you fly to like somewhere like Manchester and you're on one of those, like, it's not an Aer Lingus plane, but it's like a little tiny propeller thing.
Propeller ones,
I was flying home in that. Like, it was really scary. It was very, very, very scary. Like, got home, you know, something like 5 hours after I was expected to get home because of delays. There was delays in the trains and, oh, it was very, very stressful. But a really good first conference experience because I was really, really nervous. I had it in my head that, like, I'd stand up and, like, present, you know, my research such as it is so far, you know, only a year in, and that somebody would be like, who do you think you are to stand here? Like, just that, like I hadn't had that sense of like severe imposter syndrome in such a long time. And I was like, they're all going to know that I'm not real, that I'm not a real PhD student.
I'm not supposed to be here. I'm sorry.
I know. Yeah. Like, this is actually,
I'm sorry. Don't tell anyone.
I know. And then I got up and I did my presentation and it went great. And I got really nice questions. And people told me afterwards that, like, because obviously, it was in the UK, but there was like basically myself and my supervisor were the two people from Ireland who were presenting. There was people from like India. There was people from presenting work from like Brazil, from all over. And so they don't know about Dublin. So like my supervisor, she was presenting on kind of the gentrification of Dublin City and the loss of like spaces to dance and stuff, and that was really great. And then I was presenting on the feminist collectives, and
so you really gave a full account of
it was like it was a nice nightlife. 1-2 punch, and it was like loads of people were saying to us afterwards, like, we'd no idea, like, we have this idea of Dublin as like this, you know, like, especially in the past 10 years, like this very like liberal sort of utopia, and it's obviously Ireland has this like this image as being like really about the arts and stuff. And so many people were so surprised to hear about all the closures and all of the you know, how hard it actually is to be a musician in Ireland and to gig and to, I mean, we didn't even get into like, you know, getting people to come here to gig, but just kind of the people on the ground. So yeah, it was really interesting, really fun. Can't wait to do my next one.
Great.
Yeah, it was good. So that's why I wasn't here last week.
That's a good excuse. That's a great excuse.
Yeah.
Was there a after party for the conference?
There was. I didn't go to it because I was flying home, but
I wouldn't have expected you to go to it anyway. But
I know, yeah.
I was like, there has to be an after party for this, this one.
Yeah, there was. They had like 4 or 5 DJs. So they basically got everyone on a bus to Sheffield. And I'm not sure what the place was that they went to, but like they had like DJs like lined up. Some people were presenting that day. We're going to DJ that night and stuff. So yeah, really like just the chillest group of academics I've ever come across in my life are in the electronic dance music space. Like, like there was this one woman presenting her research on illegal raves during the COVID lockdowns in Wales and kind of the West Country. And it was specifically like acid house raves. And she was just so chill. She was just such like, and she was like showing videos from the raves. And she had a great picture of a sign like near one of these locations that said illegal raves are now illegal, which I thought was so funny because it was like, yeah, you can't do your illegal raves anymore, guys, because of COVID. And it's like, well, we could already do them before either. So, but yeah, it was great. It was really, really good. You should write a paper and go there and tell them things.
Nice. I'm looking at it here. It looks good. Looks good.
Yeah.
Great. That is great. And also, you know, kind of ties in what we're talking about there, like the Dublin City Nighttime Economy Advisor application is currently open for the city until November 2nd. So the person to be the night mayor, which we don't
the nightmare.
Yeah, I want to be the nightmare just in time for Halloween.
Tell me, who's the kind of person going for that job? Like, what's their experience? Because I don't understand what it is that they're looking for.
Well, it's somebody who definitely needs to be has events management experience, dance music experience, electronic music experience, live music experience, bar and bar and club experience for sure. They need to be somebody who also has, it's actually quite a lot really, because they have to be somebody who's averse in maybe getting, dealing with people in positions of power in terms of grants and councils and politicians. So
you do seem to be given a bit of a rundown of your own CV there now.
I don't think so.
No chance I don't think you'll throw your hat in the ring now?
No, I don't think
I could. Whoever it is, I wish them the best, because I think it's going to be a difficult job.
I mean, obviously, you know, most people are like, people like Robbie Kitt, who's been on this podcast before from Give Us the Night, are probably in a position, whether they want to or not, but maybe they're too close to it. You could potentially have somebody else in the middle. Yeah, you kind of have to sit in the Venn diagram of dance music and electronic music culture, local council people, and people who have good relations with the Gardaí. Like, you know what I mean?
It's a small sliver of
it is,
people.
Yeah. It is, you know, a sliver. Yeah, so
if they get 50 applications, I'd be surprised, you know.
Yeah, they won't. But there is a panel of people apparently put together for all this. So interesting to see what happens. That'll probably be later next year. But yeah, as an example, you were saying there, you know, like presenting to people about, you know, the how increasingly difficult it is to put on the squeeze that it is on independent artists and people who in that sphere. So that's the main topic of discussion today, right?
Yeah, it is. Yeah, we're going to talk about Bandcamp, about what's going on. I'm sure a lot of people listening have been following the story, but I guess we just wanted to give it like space on the podcast to actually talk about it, because like we, in roundabout ways, we've talked about Bandcamp a lot here. You know, we talked about the Bandcamp Fridays and what an important and kind of positive thing that was during COVID-19, where Bandcamp would, you know, forego their cut of, you know, fees from any transactions on the site for anybody who buys music in order to support artists. And it really is like one of the very, very, very few ways, beyond going directly to an artist's website, and not all artists have those, to buy music, to own it, to actually own the music and not be at risk of it leaving a streaming service, and to directly support artists through things like merch and physical copies of sales, and, you know, not having to go through, you know, big, you know, chain like HMVs or Golden Discs or whatever it might be. So yeah, so we're going to talk about the Bandcamp acquisition, and it's sad, but we're going to discuss it, and maybe discuss a little bit what we think it means or could mean for the future.
I mean, I guess you're right. Like, we've never really discussed Bandcamp directly, because it is kind of the backbone of a lot of things that happen in the, you know, in the sphere.
Certainly in independent music.
Yeah. I'm always like recommending, you know, music on it. It's just because of Bandcamp Friday and stuff like that became a leading light in terms of, when artists, I mean, we were lucky in this country because we had the pandemic unemployment payment we were able to access, but for people who were literally left without any revenue, the Bandcamp sales and revenue that the people were able to generate for their own music, especially during that time, was literally a godsend. It was a lifesaver for them.
I'll never forget seeing, I think it was like the first Bandcamp Friday, and Maya Sophia tweeted a thank you to everybody who bought things in her Bandcamp store, because now she was able to pay rent that month. Like it really does come down to that level of like artists aren't making money, and we'll get into this, you know, artists aren't making money even if they have millions of streams on Spotify or on another streaming service. They're not making money unless you give them money. So, you know, the acquisition by SongTrader is just, it's, you know, I was saying before we started recording, it's like it's another like death knell in independent music and in, you know, the feasibility of musicians being able to make a livelihood for themselves out of just music, you know, and not have to also work full time in tech or whatever it might be. So I was going to start with kind of like just talking about who the key players are, I guess, like who is Bandcamp, who is SongTrader, why is this acquisition such a big deal? So for anyone who's like not familiar with Bandcamp, and there are people who don't use Bandcamp at all, it's a, like we said, it's a direct consumer marketplace for musicians to sell their music. You can buy MP3s, you can buy, like, I think you can get like FLAX on there, you can get like really high quality downloads.
They give you different options.
And the price will depend on that. You can buy like physical copies of music, like LPs and CDs and cassettes, and you can buy merch. And it's also like kind of a platform for musicians to update their fans on goings on what they might be doing. You'd get a lot of like Bandcamp exclusive Bandcamp exclusive albums. Like there was a Father John Misty album that he put out, a live album that was only available to buy through Bandcamp, and that's like relatively common in kind of indie music spaces. And so yeah, Bandcamp basically, for every purchase that's made between you and them, they take 15% of each sale, which is nothing compared to what the cut is from Spotify. And for one day a month on Bandcamp Fridays, they forego the cut and give 100% of profits to the artists on that day. And there's also this other side of Bandcamp as well, Bandcamp Daily, which is an editorial platform. A lot of people writing for that, a lot of people writing really, really interesting niche stuff that just would not get published, would not get commissioned in any kind of more mainstream kind of music site. Yeah. So it's a bit of a bridge between, like, you know, music blogs and Substacks and things that you might.
I would say like the Bandcamp Daily things. Stuff kind of filled the blanks where Red Bull Music Academy used to be, as in like
definitely
fostering an ethos of celebrating underground and independent, independent driven music coverage.
And not just in the West either. Like they cover music from all around the world, and they cover a lot of kind of like fusions, and they ask questions about like why, like they've really, really excellent writers on there, like writing about like why a certain style of music emerged at a certain time in a certain place, and like what was like the melting pot of culture that was happening around that time. And that's all really, really important, you know, context to have around the music that we listen to. And it also spotlights a lot of independent music as well. So it's great writers, great editorial team working there as well. And then, you know, from a consumer's point of view, it's a purchasing platform, but it's also a listening platform. So you can have the app on your phone, you can listen to music through that app, and you can listen to it on your desktop as well. And there are people who have their entire library of music on Bandcamp. I'm not one of those people, but I have like a lot of the music that I have on Bandcamp is music that isn't available elsewhere. So I have like, you know, the early, early Car Seat Headrest albums aren't available for streaming, but they are up on Bandcamp and you can buy them for like $1 on Bandcamp. So I have them on there. And if I want to listen to them, that's the platform that I listen to them through. So it was founded in 2007, had its headquarters in California. And in March 2022, it was acquired by Epic Games, who are the, you know, company, the game design company behind Fortnite. Mm-hmm. So this might mean something to other people. It doesn't mean anything to me, but I'll read it out. They also developed Unreal Engine, a commercially available game engine, which also powers their internally developed video games like Fortnite and the Unreal, Gears of War, and Infinity Blade series. In 2014, Unreal Engine was named the most successful video game engine by Guinness World Records. And like I said, none of that means anything to me, except I'm looking at it and I'm saying, okay, this is an extremely profitable company. I've never played Fortnite, but I know Fortnite, and I know that it is absolutely massive. Yeah. And it's a license to print money. So that acquisition happened. And then kind of, you know, there was stirrings. But it wasn't until September this year that things started to really, really look bad for Bandcamp and for the staff when Epic Games sold Bandcamp to SongTrader. SongTrader is basically, it's an American B2B music platform, so business-to-business music platform, that claims to facilitate brands, content creators, and digital platforms in their use of music for licensing purposes. As of 2019, SongTrader was the largest music licensing platform in the world. That's from their wiki. The platform offers products that can assist agencies, artists, and labels in the finding, licensing, and managing of music across various formats. So basically, it allows musicians and publishers to upload music, which can then be licensed by commercial entities like brands or like advertisements or for film or for television, that kind of thing. It's valued at over $300 million. And in March of this year, it acquired a British competitor called Seven Digital for $23.4 million. And they have, like, I was looking at what they've been up to even in the past, like, 4 or 5 years. Like, so since 2019, they've been on an absolute like spending spree. So it's not just Bandcamp that they've acquired. They're buying up music platforms, basically. So Q Songs, which was founded by Peter Gabriel, Songzoo, which is a sound design company, Pretzel, mm-hmm. which is a music streaming platform, music metadata company, MusicCube. And this year, the company that bought SongTrader, Epic Games, sold Bandcamp after only owning them for like 18 months. And that was for an undisclosed amount of money. So it does seem like SongTrader are, you know, really, really, really trying to own the market when it comes to not just, you know, licensing, you know, like staying in the licensing side of things, but acquiring Bandcamp kind of seems like it was a big move. It was a move into the space of indie musicians. At first, SongTrader said they would, quote, continue to operate Bandcamp as a marketplace and music community with an artist first revenue share. They promised a lot to musicians during that acquisition. They said, Epic Games, when they bought them, they said it would bring Bandcamp artists to a wider audience through things like Fortnite Radio, and 231 million people play Fortnite every month was the stat I saw online. So, you know, it's a big promise. From Pitchfork asked whether artist revenue shares, user experience, or the editorial platform Bandcamp Daily will be affected by the acquisition, SongTrader declined to comment. So while all this is going on, earlier this year, Bandcamp staff all unionized, and they have a few statements. They said, "We began working here as an extension of our own love for independent music and believe that as a site that purports to offer an ethical and fair alternative to the streaming economy should reflect its mission internally. Many are ourselves independent artists, label owners, and promoters, and all of us are fans who are involved in our own local music communities. We began working here as an extension of our own love for independent music," and so on. I read that bit already. So once the acquisition happened, they put out a statement. They said, "On Thursday, Epic Games announced that SongTrader is acquiring Bandcamp. Thanks everyone for your support and solidarity as we go through this transition. We're still preparing for our scheduled negotiations on October 2nd and October 3rd with Epic Games and have submitted a formal request to management for more information about the sale. Bandcamp United," which is the name of their union, "is looking forward to bargaining with SongTrader in the near future regarding wages, working conditions, and benefits. It is our hope that SongTrader honors our existing progress, including union security and preserving our artists' first mission in our collective bargaining agreement that we've already made at the bargaining table. Stay tuned." That was, you know, that's all well and good. But when the acquisition went through, it turned out that only half of the people working at Bandcamp were offered new roles under SongTrader because SongTrader wanted to cut costs. So it basically meant a layoff of 50% of the staff. SongTrader said about that, "Over the past few years, the operating costs of Bandcamp have significantly increased. After a comprehensive evaluation, including the importance of roles for smooth business operations and pre-existing functions at SongTrader, 50% of Bandcamp employees have accepted offers to join SongTrader." So this is probably the big story that everyone saw after the acquisition. This was when people were kind of saying, like, "Look, we told you so." And a lot of Bandcamp staff were saying, "I told you so." There's someone here who works for Bandcamp. "I officially laid off after 2 weeks of limbo where I expected that would be the case, but had no confirmation. Nearly 8 years at Bandcamp and it's over. If anyone's looking for a dedicated, talented, and professional editor and culture writer, I'm on the market." Oh, well, they said they're looking for work. So it's at Modernist Witch. About half the company was laid off today. Some of the most incredible people I've ever worked with and some of the most incredible support staff. This is a loss, no two ways about it. And I think that day Bandcamp trended on Twitter and a lot of people were kind of sitting up and paying attention to this acquisition. So,
yeah.
And Pitchfork wrote a long read about it as well, which is very good. I think it's called Is Bandcamp As We Know It Over?
Yeah, Philip Sherborne wrote that piece for sure.
So from that piece, he says, a departing software engineer tells me that cuts were spread out fairly evenly across all departments except for customer support and editorial, which were hit harder. This former employee estimates that only 3 support specialists were retained. A current employee tells me that the editorial department kept 3 editors and a designer, and that Bandcamp Daily, the site's robust music publication, will continue on. Bandcamp's former executives, meanwhile, quote, all vanished on September 28th and no one has heard from them since, says the ex-employee. So it really does seem like this is not a smooth acquisition. And you have to think how much less smooth it would have been had the staff not been unionized as well. You know, like being in a union can mean a lot when you're about to bring somebody to a negotiation table, even if they have like, and they have treated the Bandcamp employees very poorly in this, but it still means something to be part of a union. Join your union, everyone.
But it does seem like, you know, based on the numbers, and they were unfairly targeted as well, the union. So, I mean, that's something we see a lot in terms of the Bandcamp union has been very, very visible in the last couple of years, and the story of that has been very visible.
And they're part of this swell of like kind of tech unionizing of tech workers. And of, you know, we've seen it happen in Amazon. We've seen it happen in other tech companies. We've seen it happen in some gaming companies as well. And it is part of this kind of like industry wide tech unionization, which is really, really important, because if you don't have that, you know, we were talking earlier about like people power. If you don't have that, then, you know, something like what happened with Twitter could happen, you know, when Musk took over Twitter and just, you know, all hell broke loose. Nobody knew if they had jobs. The only way they found out if they had jobs is whether or not their login worked on their laptop that morning, you know? So it's,
It's that time of the year. Your vacation is coming up. You can already hear the beach waves, feel the warm breeze, relax, and think about work. You really, really want it all to work out while you're away. Monday.com gives you and the team that peace of mind. When all work is on one platform and everyone's in sync, things just flow. Wherever you are, tap the banner to go to Monday.com.
If you're struggling to lose weight, you've probably heard about weight loss medications like Wegovy or Zepbound, and you might be wondering if they're right for you. Meet PlushCare, a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. If you qualify, they can safely prescribe you medication from the comfort of your own home. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
So yeah, it's a scary thing, and like it's worth reiterating that like as of May 2022, which is the most recent stats I could find, Spotify pays artists between 0.003 cents, like American cents, to 0.005 cents per stream on average, which is around about $4,000 for every million streams, which is nothing, because labels also need to take cuts from that. Like your promoter or your manager or your PR or any other stakeholders in your music, that's the cut that they're taking. And so it really has like long been the case, and like we've said it here, anybody who is at all involved in like indie music scenes or their local music scene is that like the best way to do it is support artists directly. And with this happening now, it is so much harder to do that. It's nearly impossible unless an artist has a website set up and sells music out of their house. But like that's so much that's a full-time job, you know, that's not,
yeah.
It's really, really, really difficult to maintain that. And as well, when you bought from Bandcamp, you knew that 15% was being taken out from the artist, but it was going to a platform or a marketplace that really did seem to care about independent musicians and paid their editorial teams. Like I've never written for Bandcamp, but I have some friends who have, and like they pay at least freelancers, like they pay pretty well, yeah. Like compared to, no one gets paid like enough in music journalism by any means, but they pay pretty well. They pay like, you know, above the market rate. And so, you know, it's so unclear what's going to happen now. Like, will the editorial side of Bandcamp remain? I highly doubt it, because I don't imagine it is a big driver of revenue for the company. Will Bandcamp Fridays remain? I would put my money on almost certainly not, because why on earth would you sacrifice 15% of your profits for one day a month? If you are, yeah,
if you're saying that your company isn't operational, isn't currently operating, and you're firing people,
the
benefit of that to you as a, I mean, it's down to, you know, oh well, these people are, you know, we have people we have to look after first before we can think about the artist, and again, the artist comes last.
And I think that's what's so, you know, I think we all of us outside of the business world, we learned a lot watching Succession. And I think that one of the big things we learned watching Succession was like actually why companies make the decisions that they do and what decisions you're allowed to make as a company. And if SongTrader wanted to continue running a, you know, a non-profitable editorial section on their website, or if they wanted to continue foregoing 15% of their profits, then they have to explain to their shareholders why that is the case, and the shareholders wouldn't accept that, and you know, and then Succession happens. but really what it is, you know, we have to really question, like, does what role it does a company who answers to shareholders playing in any kind of independent music space? Like, it just doesn't seem reasonable to it seems like it's in direct contradiction with what the platform actually is there for, because there's tons of music platforms online, you know, we've got loads of them, and the most profitable thing for this company to do now would be to turn Bandcamp into a streaming service, because, you know, look at how profitable streaming service models are, you know? So it's just really worrying.
That comes with its own, I have a lot of thoughts on that. Well, I mean, that one comes with its own issues as well, because the streaming model brings in licensing, and obviously SongTrader being a licensing company, they could possibly look at that, but their licensing is like exploitation as opposed to, revenue generating for other artists, and generating income for other artists, which is what Bandcamp do. So they thought they might be able to adapt Bandcamp into their vibe, which is, you know, they license music directly, and that's a different thing than, you know, it's like you said, it's a B2B business. It services brands and agencies. Again, something which is, you know, primarily not always independently driven, because usually brands and brands want big acts, and they want to license music from big acts, and that's usually what happens for a lot of people. Even if they don't have the money for that, that's what they will try and do. And I think that is interesting to think about, because there's been a number of other things this week that have happened, which I'm going to talk about. But before we get that, I just want to say, we have covered before, both on the website and here as well, some of the different platforms that you can use and stuff like that. And just to briefly mention, what we're talking about here, we've talked about, there's a great piece that Joel Harkin, the musician Joel Harkin, did for us once about a year and a half, 2 years ago when Spotify was, February 2022, the alternatives to Spotify. We did a podcast about it. He wrote about to us and went into depth on the services on offer. One of the ones he mentions is resonate.is. And Resonate is a streaming music service cooperative owned by the people that use it. Musicians, indie labels, fans and developers stream it until you own it. So that's it's its own particular model that it works.
Is that the one where if you stream it enough times
you will own it.
To get the revenue, yeah. Then you own the music. I think that's such a great idea for a model. And does that have like, what's the deal? Sorry, I don't know if you've looked into this today or not, but like what's the deal with like artists on there? Like are your faves on there or?
I mean, this is the problem with all of these. I think we kind of have to think about these things less as streaming and one size fits all.
Yeah.
Streaming service as opposed to like think about your traditional mom and pop stores, your little independent shops where you can go, oh, they have this, I really like that, I'll go check out what else they have. Seen like web stores like bleep.com and Boomcat, which are really, you know, for very particular audiences in experimental and electronic music, being used as fine examples of this, which they essentially are a web store for people who want to own music, because DJs, electronic musicians and producers often still want to buy music. And that's where Bandcamp also comes in, because a lot of the stuff I bought on Bandcamp was, music edits, stuff that isn't probably fully legal sometimes, and that is something that is allowed to exist on it. Other alternatives,
or if you're a DJ or something and you just want to own, like,
well, that's it, MP3s, that's what I use it for, and mostly,
yeah,
you know, and a lot of people make their living out of that as well, and you can subscribe, and Bandcamp did a really good job in terms of, you know, offering subscriptions and buying, so you could buy full discographies, and you kind of had this like almost Patreon style model where you are using Bandcamp as a subscription service where you can offer that as a subscription. There's other ones, including Faircamp, which is a static site generator for audio producers, does all the kind of hard donkey work for you and allow you to sell and host music. There's Nina, which is a music platform and a new platform for publishing and streaming and purchasing music. Nina charges artists a small fee per upload that covers the permanent storage of their work. Their releases are made exclusive to the public for streaming and purchase as tokenized assets, with quantities and prices set by the artists. Nina pays artists 100% of primary sales and a percentage secondary market sales of their choice. Obviously, we can talk about this in the context of NFTs. And why do NFTs exist? Why did people get mad into crypto? Because the rising cost of living, sure, it affects everybody. And that's why people get into crypto, because they're like, I want to make money. The traditional models are failing us, of capitalism are failing us. And that's why a lot of musicians actually in the last couple of years have got into crypto as well. Like, they might not want to talk about it openly, but I know a fair few musicians who have got into that world in order to try and make a quick buck or make some money. That's why they're doing it, because music has completely devalued over the years. And now we're at a point where
free. It's like whatever album you want to listen to, you can just find it for free. And I don't think it obviously has like a very kind of like liberating quality for people who don't have, like, everybody deserves to be able to listen to music and be able to access music. I really, really believe that. But there has to be something you can do, you know?
Yeah, and there are a number of other open source audio platforms currently in development, the one called Mirlo and one called Tone.audio. If you are interested in the alternative models of music and creation, I can recommend the Interdependence podcast with Holly Herndon and Matt Dryden, always keeping an eye on what's going on in the new world of AI and music technology. Interdependence is what it's called. And they do Patreon-only episodes as well, like ourselves, where they interview people and post the long-form versions on their account. Yeah, so all that's to say, there are people who are developing alternative models, but the reason that those models exist is because what happens is all of these things get bought up. So there's been a couple of recent examples. Just this week, NTS Radio, it was announced that NTS Radio was which is, you know, an online radio station media platform based in London. Very cool. Again, quite underground. But it was bought by Universal Music Group in the last week. And that is, for a lot of people who would be people in that world, would be quite alarmed that this independent radio station is being bought by Universal Music. Why? Mm-hmm. So that is something that just came out recently. If you want to stay in touch and see more writing on this as it's happening, I would recommend firstfloor.substack.com, which is Sean Rinaldo's Substack, covering a lot of this kind of stuff in terms of electronic music. Certainly where I've seen a lot of this stuff, NTS Radio, partially owned by Universal Music Group. And this is a cause for alarm for a lot of people, because why is a big major label, the biggest major label in the world, buying up things like NTS Radio, where it doesn't have any obvious way in? I mean, anyone, there's an email there from people who support NTS Radio, and they were saying, you know, they have been assured, people have been assured that nothing will change, but that's what they say about all these things. That's what happens. What happens is the people that come in own this as an asset and not as a community. And the community disappears because people are get threatened and frightened about where this is going. And that's why this Bandcamp stuff is important for people like us, and for people and the musicians who listen to this podcast, and the people who are fans who listen to this podcast, because it is another chip away at the old independent music block. Here's another one. It just came out in the last hour. Spotify reportedly plans to pay even less in royalties to less popular artists. Now, this is pretty alarming, because the whole thing here is, again, Universal is involved here, because I'll read out the first bit here. This is from a Stereogum article that just came out about an hour and a half ago, 2 hours. Spotify, already notorious for its insultingly low royalty rates, is reportedly planning to pay even less to artists who don't already get a ton of streams. Billboard reports that the giant Swedish streaming service is restructuring its royalty system, and that it will then demonetize tracks that had previously received 0.5 of Spotify's royalty pool. Now, if you remember, we talked about user-centric payment systems and stuff on this podcast before. That is what this is about, because that is not how this works. User-centric payment systems are user-driven. It depends on what you listen to for how that music is divided up. With a model like Spotify, what essentially happens is all the music goes into a pool, and it's divided up into a percentage, and meaning that whoever streams the most that month. So your money directly that you paid listening, if you only listen to, what did we say before? Say, who's got an album out this week?
Or say you only listen to Niamh Regan, and she's the only person on Spotify you listen to. That doesn't mean that if you listen to her for a million times, that doesn't mean that she's getting $4,000. That means that all of the money from those streams goes into a pot, and then that pot is then divvied out. Is that right? Yeah. That's outrageous. Like it's
and there are questions. I covered something recently about this. There was a study done by somebody who was involved in previously worked for Spotify, and whether the user centric payments were actually better or worse. And that concluded that actually it could potentially be worse for people. Yeah. So look, there's conflicting ideas about this, but the point is, Spotify is the big market, has the big market share. Yeah. What this essentially means is that demonetizing tracks that previously received 0.5% of Spotify's royalty pool, that's most independent artists.
Yeah.
That is not good news, because that means someone who's trying to build their small little career, who's only getting a very small fraction of pennies, will just get nothing now at all. Yeah. So now the gates have gone up even further and higher, and you can't climb over that gate unless you've got 100,000 people or 100,000 people listening to your songs or something like that. I don't know what
the backing of a major label.
To get you over that. Even that, the pole as vault a model, is, of this, you know, gate.
And this really shows that major labels, like, being so complicit in this model and like really centering themselves in this model, because they are not, you know, innocent. They're not like, this is a deal between Spotify and labels, remember. It really shows that they are grasping on with everything they have for their power in the music business, in like in the record industry, because it really looked for a while there in the 2000s like they were gone. And this is their way of getting back in. And I've no problems with the existence of record labels. Like, don't get me wrong, but it's this kind of like squashing down, like, independent artists, smaller labels as well. It's like that thing where, do you know that when Amazon sells a book, they routinely sell it at a loss? Amazon don't make money from the books that they sell, because the market share that they will gain from independent bookshops and smaller bookshops closing down is so much more valuable to them than the money they'll make on an individual book. So like, it's that kind of like, do not like I, what whatever about buying, you know, a part for your laptop or whatever, but do not buy books from Amazon, everybody out there. It's really, really, really bad. But it really reminds me of that, you know. It reminds me of that sort of like callous, profit driven attitude towards art or literature that is so cold, and not only does it kind of dehumanize the people at the center of it, it actually puts the entire system at risk of only privileging people who have, you know, record deals. And we know as well that only certain types of people are able to get record deals in the first place, and there are certain people who are privileged in gaining a record deal. And it's just really, really sad, and it's maddening that, you know, obviously everything comes back to this system that we live in. I don't want to say the C word, but like, it does come back to that. But once you start buying up Bandcamp, once you start really driving down like any chance an independent artist has to make it not even big, but just make it enough so that they have like a fan base that is enough to support them, so that they don't have to also work a full-time job. Like, there's also a cost of living crisis going on. Like, it's like, these are all very, very, very real things that affect artists and affect musicians today. And we've just lost another way that we have to try to directly support them as fans. So it's really, really sad.
Well, Bandcamp isn't gone yet. I mean, it's not gone yet. These things don't go immediately, but they do dissipate quickly.
Not with a bang, with a whimper.
Yeah, so I mean, I felt like if anything, it needs a bit more. Bandcamp just needs a bit more work. You're only able to listen to the offline stuff that you'd bought very recently on the app. So I'm just quite excited about it. Like, cool. Like, I haven't probably done it an awful lot because, you know, but it is nice, and you have the stuff that you bought on your phone that you can listen to. But not that hard to imagine, really. But yeah, certainly not in something that is. It was only February this year that Bandcamp users can now make playlists on the app as well. So
yeah,
just one of those things, you know.
But
yeah, it's been only good news on that front, but now we are going the other way. So certainly not great for us.
I should have thought of a reason to be cheerful for us to wrap up on. Do you have a reason to be cheerful now?
Reason to be cheerful is it's a bank holiday weekend, and I.
My reason to be cheerful is that we're doing a sort of quasi live podcast in the Big Romance next month, and people can buy tickets.
Well, no, they can't, because it's sold out.
Did it sell out? Okay. Well, there's our reason to be cheerful. Oh, that's great news. Yay.
There you go. Yeah.
Woo. We'll see you there.
Unless you didn't get a listening ticket. Party.
Yeah, on November 8th. If you didn't get a ticket, don't cry. There'll be another one the next month, and we'll tell you that closer to the time. But that's great news.
Yeah, there you go.
Yay.
There you go. So that's kind of it for us this week. As the days have turned darker, and obviously the world has got a bit darker as well in the last few weeks for obvious reasons, in with Palestine, and things just keep getting weirder and darker. So that's we may have to bring back the reasons to be cheerful. But
I think it would be a good idea. Yeah. From next week on, we'll do reasons to be cheerful. So next week we're back with our songs and albums and books and TV and so on of the month. I won't put you through Big Brother chat too much.
Oh, no.
Then
I used to love Big Brother, but you can tell me about it next week.
I'll tell you all about it next week. But if anyone wants my deep thoughts on Big Brother, I'm recording an episode of Juvenalia with Sarah, who is also similarly like completely brain rotted with this season of Big Brother and just like, you know,
you guys.
We're recording that on Thursday, so I'm not sure when that'll be out, but keep an eye in your feeds for that. And yeah, stay cool. Don't key any cars.
Well, I hope you enjoyed my story anyway.
I loved it. I loved it. I'm glad you shared it with the listeners.
Yeah. I mean, it's just been in my, it's been in my rear view of my head for the last while, you know.
I don't blame you. I'm glad you're getting closure. Slowly. Yeah,
exactly.
Like a door slowly closing.
Exactly.
Speaking of a door slowly closing.
Whatever you're doing this weekend, I hope you have a good one. Patreon.com/Nodder9 if you do want to support us directly. As ever, there's playlists and discords, and I gave away some tickets to the streets last week as well. And, you know, there's a Discord fantasy league. There was a meetup at Lumo last weekend. Lovely stuff. Really nice.
Yeah.
And there's loads of gigs on this weekend. Consult the Nodder9 Dublin Gig Guide if you're interested in seeing what's on. Alternating Current was one thing we talked about briefly that is on this weekend. And then the following weekend, Haunted Dance Hall is on in National Concert Hall as well. So that'd be really, really interesting. So lots on to go and see, even though the best way you can support an artist is go see them live and buy their record from them directly if you can do so.
Put your money in there. Paul.
And I want to just shout out briefly the Irish album release dates page that I created recently on the website. It's in the new music section. Basically, look, it's a list of all of the new albums that are coming out and coming up very soon. And it's updated very regularly at the moment.
Yeah.
We had a big week for albums last week, and I'm sure there's some stuff that was released from Irish artists that we will be discussing very soon. Next week.
It's very
Then, it's myself and Andrea Cleary saying
signing off.
Goodbye.
Goodbye.
Bye.